is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor and they're ready to score, so let the game begin. And let's see how the ball's gonna bounce today.
Playoffs?
Basketball historian Tim Gallagher joins the Bullseye again in a very exciting time. A lot of topics to broach with latest news about Joakim Noah. But before we get into that, let's get into the topic du jour right now in the NBA, which is the unbelievable, surprising results so far in the Western Conference, where the Warriors are now down 3-1 after another impressive victory by the Oklahoma City Thunder. Led by Russell Westbrook last night with just an incredible triple-double performance and four steals. I don't know if you saw the entire game, Tim, but, man, I was blown away with his athleticism, his fire. That guy is just a force of nature that continues to impress game after game. Where do you think this series is going? I mean, do you think the Warriors still have a chance, or is it going to be the Oklahoma City Thunder representing the West in the playoffs?
Well, I did watch the game, and I know I predicted five games in our earlier podcast with Golden State winning, and so I think I was still in the aftershock of the Spurs getting beat by Oklahoma City, but you know, they're just rolling over Golden State. So, and I guess in some ways it's not shocking when you look at how good Durant and Westbrook are and how good they've been over a period of time. And I was thinking back when Oklahoma City got to the finals in 2012 against the Heat, and they lost. And I know they lost Harden then after that season. But I still thought with Westbrook and Durant, that team would be right there and probably be making more finals appearances in the very near future. Obviously, that got sidetracked a little bit, and it hasn't happened. But it looks like with some of the pieces they put together and then the coaching change with Billy Donovan, obviously, is making some sense. And I guess you can look back to Billy Donovan's college coaching at Florida, that he knew how to get teams to peak at the right time. He had the teams with Noah, who we'll talk about later, and Al Horford and Corey Brewer and that group, and won back-to-back NCAA titles. So I'm sure that wasn't any walk in the park, even as talented as they were in the winning culture that those guys have had. So I think a lot of credit to him. I think even more shocking, though, is just that they're dismantling Golden State. And you know, we've been talking about all the unprecedented things that Golden State has been doing all season. And I guess we may be headed to another unprecedented situation where no team with this many wins in a season has never not won the title, right? So we may be headed to that. So, you know, with Westbrook, just trying to come up with an analogy for how good he is. And I saw him at UCLA as a college player, and you know, and he was good and athletic, but I don't think anyone saw how high his ceiling has become playing on those teams. And there were a lot of other NBA players as his teammates at UCLA, and you know, and there was somewhat of a system there under Ben Howland. And you know, there were some people that argued, and Ben Howland's not the coach there anymore, despite getting the three straight Final Fours during part of his time there, that he didn't really let those guys loose. Obviously, we're seeing the greatness of Westbrook. I know in a recent podcast, I used a football analogy to talk about Lonzo Ball, that dynamic point guard that's going to be at UCLA next year that I saw play in a high school All-American game, and compared him to Russell Wilson as a football quarterback and just how unique he is to the game. And I was thinking about Westbrook, and again, I'm not a huge NFL fan, but you know, certainly followed all sports over the years. And when I think of Westbrook, he's almost like a Barry Sanders or a Walter Payton, right, in terms of just that kind of speed and strength and just fire that they play with. There's just not many that have ever played like those two running backs, and I put Westbrook in that class in the NBA. Just, you can't think of many guys that have ever played like him with that kind of coast-to-coast energy and passion and athleticism and just, you know, that kind of fire in his eye. So, you know, I think at this point, you really have to talk about him in the same breath as LeBron and Curry and the very, very elite players in the league.
Well, yeah, and there's no doubt, you know, that it was Barkley mentioned it yesterday. I think it was Barkley on the post-game show that, you know, his athleticism is just separates him from everyone else. And the only guy he seemed like it was, you know, Rose in his first few years in the league. And when you watch video of Rose before the injury and after the injury, there's no doubt there's a difference there. He's just not athletically as superior as he once was, and just an incredible freak of nature. Whereas Westbrook has endured these knee surgeries, obviously not as serious as Derek has. And he still has that athleticism and that just the speed. It's really mind-blowing to me. And I do like how he's kind of taking on more of a leadership position. It always rubbed me the wrong way that I just felt in general the fans, you know, assumed he was the Pippen to, you know, Durant's Jordan. And in this series, you know, Durant sucked down the stretch in game one. I think he missed 7 straight shots. He did make the one shot with a minute or so left, but he missed 7 of his last 8 shots, and they still won. Last night, he shot 30%. He was terrible for the most part in that game. He hit 24 shooting, I know, at one point. He did get a lot of points from the line, but not a very good game on his part, in my opinion, and yet they destroyed him. They absolutely destroyed him. So I think it's good to see Westbrook becoming more of the alpha, Durant becoming more of the beta. I think that's the way he should go with this team. And anyhow, if Westbrook keeps on playing like this, there's no stopping this team. I mean, they can beat anyone. So
the supporting cast has been so impressive. Steven Adams has really stepped up to just so effective. And when you make a guy like Bogut somewhat disappear on the floor, who's about as big and strong and, you know, menacing as any post player in the league, you know, you don't even notice Bogut on the floor out there when Adams is out there. So to have that kind of an impact, and then Deion Waiters and Roberson and Cantor, you know, and no one even really talks about Serge Ibaka anymore, but he's certainly still a very effective player and hit some timely shots. And, you know, and although Westbrook... Durant was struggling a bit scoring-wise, the thing I really noticed was all the deflections and steals or tip-aways that Oklahoma City had as a team. And you just take a look at the length and athleticism of all of those guys. And Durant was really imposing his will defensively, which I didn't really think of him on those terms much in the past. But, you know, when they would do switch outs, he would just be swarming Curry, you know, and make it difficult for Curry to even get a pass off.
Absolutely. So, and that's where he obviously did improve. And I was very impressed with him on the defensive end. That was by far the best I've ever seen him play defensively, at least so far in this series. But you bring up Adams. Adams is like a poor man's Noah at his best. I mean, some of the passes he had yesterday, throwing the fastball overhand. And on the defensive end, the guy's absolutely fantastic. You know, I really love that kid. And then conversely, Draymond Green, he's got nothing but love, nothing but speeches about how great the guy is. I'm going to go on a limb right now and say, I think Draymond Green's the most overrated player I've ever seen in watching basketball. He's a good player. But the way people talk about him, they give him such reverence and such love, like he's an elite player. He's played with the two best spacemakers, arguably in the history of the game, in Curry.
Right.
You know, and he has so much more room as a big man than any other player, arguably, who's ever played the game. So, and for him to come out with a 1-for-9, incredibly stupid play in kicking Adams in the balls, and it's a travesty he wasn't suspended for the next game. They get lucky, and he gets it, and I would argue he would have been better off without him. He was horrible yesterday. He was 1-of-7, 6 turnovers, absolutely terrible on both ends of the court. And, you know, yet let's, you know, it's Curry or it's, you know, it's Thompson. Give me a break. Draymond Green has sucked this series. He's been totally outplayed by the Thunder, and that's the reason we're here right now.
Right. Well, and it's been interesting and will continue to be interesting to see how Draymond Green deals with the adversity, because he's all about the swag and, you know, the brashness, right? And basically, most of his career, everything's gone pretty easily for reasons you just mentioned, right? And, you know, they've had great teams and great space makers, and he's had room to do his thing. But, yeah, I thought the kick to Adams was definitely not a natural basketball play. And I kind of joke that I think that's his inner Artest coming out, right? So I think when things go bad, I think Draymond may lean more toward the Ron Artest, you know, Meta World Peace kind of, you know, who is this guy and what's he going to do next, right? It could get dangerous out there. It would be very surprising for me to see Golden State bounce back. And, you know, I thought last night, okay, they're going to show what they're really made of, even though it's on the road. And to see Green be ineffective, to see Curry, and I think the way Curry played last night, and, you know, there's talk that he may be less than 100% with his knee, although he certainly proclaimed that he was back and scored, you know, 17 in the overtime against Portland. But to see Curry missing shots that I've always seen him make, some of those drives to the baskets and layups that he makes, I don't know the numbers right off the top of my head, but I know he has one of the higher field goal percentages around the basket of any player of any size in the league. So to see him look so pedestrian out there for the first time in my eyes in years, you know, it kind of reminded me of, you know, like a Mo Williams level, or, you know, a player of that level, right? And to see him reduced to that was just hard for me to sort of reconcile. You know, Thompson did step it up in the third quarter and looked great.
But he was great. Absolutely
it
great.
Although it looked like they were all kind of pressing and taking what I thought were rush threes, right? They'd get back in the game. And I know that's the way they've been playing, that wide open, free and easy style. But it seemed like, just my sense of watching it, there were a few times, even though those guys were great shooters, Thompson and Curry obviously in particular, that there were a few of those possessions where it just seemed a little rushed, and that they needed to have a better possession than just pushing up a three early in the clock. And
I know you don't like it.
Maybe the OKC defense is just so stifling, though, that's all they felt they could get.
I felt that way about Curry. I thought Curry, they just defended him better than any team I've ever seen defend Curry. He's getting hit with double teams with length. It's not two guards. It's, you know, Durant and all his length, and, you know, another player who's usually athletic with length. It's incredible, and that's why he's struggling so much. But, you know, Golden State has Azili missing the free throws is just killing it. I thought that was the second quarter, the second half of the second quarter was a real critical moment, and that guy must have missed six free throws. And just shows how important it is to hit your free throws. But two, if they're going to employ that strategy, you just can't have him on the floor. You just cannot keep on having a guy step up there and missing free throws. And
right.
And I thought that was a really key moment there. And conversely, you know, they started to do it a little bit with Robertson, but not to the effect that they did with, you know, with Easley. So I don't know. I feel that they're in big trouble now. I think this series is, I mean, I think it's over. It'd be a miracle to me if they won three straight.
I think so too. I think, you know, they probably have a chance to win at home. I mean, I think obviously everything's on the line, but it was such a dismal performance last night, and obviously the confidence is all with Oklahoma City right now. Yeah, I agree with you too on the hack of Azili, because Golden State is such a free-flowing team, right, that I would think when they saw that OKC was doing that, to sub him out, because you want to, you know, even if it's going small and having to deal with Adams on the other end or the rebounding side of it, I just don't think you want the pace of the game slowed down so much that you're not able to get things in the flow. And so, but back to that Steven Adams pass is one of my favorite passes I've ever seen in basketball.
Oh, the fastball. I loved it.
If they make another edition of the Dodgeball movie, I think they need to cast him as one of the leads, because that was an incredible pass to Roberson. I don't know if I've ever seen a basketball pass quite like that.
Absolutely agree with you. Absolutely agree. It was great to watch. And I think Billy Donovan's been kind of I'm really glad to see, in a way. I'm not a fan of the Thunder, because I think they're so dependent on officiating, or at least Durant is. He's such a player that gets so many points off the free throw line. I've never seen a player get more calls, unofficial calls, than Kevin Durant. It really irritates me when he, you know, complains on every call, right? So he's, to me, not one of my favorite players to watch. But I do like Billy Donovan. I do think he's been unfairly criticized as a coach this entire year. And, you know, just his garbage, et cetera, et cetera. And this has really been a great experience. I am a huge Westbrook fan. I think the guy's incredible. And it's been great to see him succeed in the playoffs.
Right. Fred, do you think that this is going to keep Durant in OKC? Just think a month or so ago, everyone was saying, well, Durant, he's going to probably really look at other places because he'll have a better chance to get to the finals and win a championship. But now, I think that's totally flipped. Where, why wouldn't he want to align himself with Westbrook? And then I would think other free agents would want to go there and play with those guys.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I mean, where is he realistically going to go outside Oklahoma City to have a chance to win a title? I there's no place that he's going to have a better chance to win a title. He owns that city. And not only that, I think if he does leave, I think he'll be looked on very poorly. You know, he'll become more like LeBron. I think a big reason people dislike LeBron so much is he left Cleveland for Miami. And I think that's a part of the reason today that he's so disliked. I think it would be a bad move on his part if he did leave, especially after this run. And especially if Oklahoma City is offering the world, right? I mean, I don't know. You know, we'll see. Like I said, I'm not a huge Durant fan. I really find it nauseating how he acts sometimes when there's no call staring down the refs. And I don't know when this act started, but for a guy who just gets so many pathetic calls, it's just ridiculous to me that he's always complaining. Have you noticed this with him? He's really, every time there's any type of, you know, staring on the ref, questioning the ref, you know, and I know all great players, and some of them do it. It seems to me no one does it to the extent that he does.
Right. Well, he does get to the line a lot, so it must be working. So I guess
you're right
with it. But, yeah, and yeah. I'm more of old school, just play the game and, bug eyes on every call against you or worse than that. You know, I'm not just talking to Durant, but everybody. Just accept the call and move on, right? I mean, unless it's a blatantly bad call. But you know, that's such a small percentage of the calls that are made in the game. Just let your game do the talking.
How about Cleveland-Toronto? I mean, now this series 2-2, big game tonight. It's unbelievable, right? This series is where it's at right now. So Toronto-Cleveland, series tonight 2-2. Did not see this happening. I mean, this is more surprising to me than, you know, the Thunder going up 3-1. It's incredible how Cleveland, who looked, you know, basically unstoppable, they only had two losses in their entire history since LeBron returned to Cleveland, and those were to the Bulls, as an aside. Now the series is 2-2. They look like a completely different team in Toronto. What say you on this series? What has the difference been?
Well, after those first two games, I'm shocked that Toronto was able to bounce back so effectively and especially win two games. I could see maybe winning one just with the home court and, you know, Lowry and DeRozan, who, you know, we've already talked about are not really elite players, but very, very good players. But, you know, they've both bounced back and gone off on the home court and tied the series. And Biombo, you know, 26 rebounds. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's, what energy he's brought to the game and their team. And, you know, I think there's some odd things that I've noticed about that series in terms of, in particular, the Cavs and who they played in the fourth quarter and how quiet LeBron was in the last game in the fourth quarter, and that Tristan Thompson, I think, didn't play or barely played, and then Love hasn't played in the fourth quarter the last two games. And just hearing Tyronn Lue, and I listened to both press conferences because I'm real curious when a guy like Love, who, you know, is obviously a max player and, you know, a key guy in their big three. And I know he's had his criticisms in terms of, you know, things he can't do or what his plus minus is or how effective he is defensively. But I think if you're paying a guy, and Kevin Love is no dog, right? He's a very effective player and can shoot the ball. So both times Tyronn Lue said, well, it wouldn't be fair to Kevin to put him back in cold in the fourth quarter, which I don't know if I've ever really heard a coach talk that way about one of the star players that you're paying big money to and counting on to get to a
great
championship.
Point. Great
I don't know point. If you heard those words, but I just thought that was odd. And I thought, in a way, that was Lue kind of throwing Kevin Love under the bus. And then he was questioned about Love's health because you saw Love tweaked his ankle when he stepped on the referee's foot, which was kind of accidental. And I know he's been banged up a little bit. But then for Lou to say, well, I wasn't really sure of his health status. Heck, Fred, I'm sure if you're coaching your daughter's Pee Wee League team and the third best girl on the team, you know, sprained her ankle or had a cold and her mom came down to see how she was doing on the bench, but it was a close game and you need her to back in, you'd find out, right? Can she go? Can she get back in the game? Right?
Yeah.
So Tyronn Lue did not know Kevin Love's health status in the fourth quarter of a playoff game. I mean, that's almost as weird
ridiculous
to me as Blatt trying to call a timeout with no timeouts in a playoff game last year, right? You have to know those things, right? You have a whole staff of people on the bench with you to inform you of those things. So I just thought that was really odd. And then with Biombo being such a dominant force on the glass, why Tristan Thompson wasn't in the game to help offset that? Because that, even though Biombo wasn't scoring, he was really a difference maker with his energy and rebounding, and that's what Tristan Thompson brings to the court. So I just thought some of the substitutions and non-playing of certain key guys by Lou was very questionable to me.
My only answer is it's got to be that LeBron wanted it that way. Because to me, with everything with Lou is, it's what LeBron wants. And, you know, I don't know what these guys are talking. I've never felt like, for whatever reason, LeBron has completely embraced Kevin Love. And he doesn't really, I don't know if he doesn't respect his game. I don't know what it is. There's something between those two that's never really, you know, seemed right to me. You know, on the court and off the court, both ways. Do you feel the same way?
There is a sense of that, and I think there's even a wider sense of that around the league with Kevin Love, and some of my contacts and sources feel that way, I know, and which is kind of odd to me because I saw Kevin Love play in high school, actually. He brought his Lake Oswego team down to Orange County to play against Mater Dei, which is a big powerhouse school. And Kevin Love and four guys that you think twice about picking them up for your team at the rec center for a pickup game, he led them to a win against Mater Dei on Mater Dei's home court with leadership, unselfishness, double-double, you know, the whole thing, right? And then he went on to UCLA. It was just there for 1 year, but got them to the Final Four, where they lost to Memphis with Derrick Rose, by the way, in the semifinals. So I've always thought very highly of Kevin Love and his skill set and, you know, his rebounding ability. And, you know, now I know at Minnesota he never got any playoff action, never got his team to the playoffs, and there was kind of a knock on him there. But, I mean, really, other than a brief window of time with Garnett, when has Minnesota really ever done anything, right? And so I kind of put that almost like going to the Sacramento Kings or somewhere like that, where you can't put it all on the player. Part of it's the organization and just the lack of success they've ever had. So I do sense what you're saying, that somehow Kevin Love just doesn't get the respect that I feel like he should get. And for Lou to, you know, I just have never heard it worded that way. Well, it wouldn't be fair to Kevin to put him in the game cold in the fourth quarter. Heck, this guy's, you know, a past all-star,
exactly,
Olympic gold medalist. I mean, what? Did I really hear him say that? I could hear him say, hey, you know, he tweaked his ankle. You know, I needed somebody that was, you know, that I knew was 100% there physically, and Kevin wasn't. I just thought that was one of the most odd answers I've ever heard. And he did it two different press conferences in a row.
Yeah, there's something going on there where he's not really fitting in this team. And I tell you what, I imagine he'll be gone if they don't win a title. Especially if this, I mean, gosh, imagine if the Toronto somehow pulls the series out. I mean, to go from where we were talking a week or so ago about Lowry, you know, and DeRozan being, you know, just good players, not great players, and then watching Toronto somehow win this series, well, holy smokes, if they can beat the Cavs, what a huge loss, what a huge blemish this would be on LeBron's resume.
Right, I agree. It would certainly be disruptive. I still think Cleveland, you know, they have to win two out of three, and two of those three are going to be on their home court. So I can't imagine there's any way Cleveland will lose this series. And I think Toronto kind of maxed out on those two home games, although they're going to get another home game, so it may go seven. You know, again, kind of like with Golden State, I'll believe it when I see it. Oh, it looks like they're going down to OKC. Same thing with LeBron. It's hard to bet against him, against anybody, anytime, just because of the body of work that he's had.
Yeah, I guess last question to sum this, wrap up this playoffs. What do you think is more likely if you had to bet, that Warriors come back from a 3-1 deficit or Toronto beats Cleveland?
Which one is more likely?
Yes.
I think it's more likely Toronto beats Cleveland, because I just can't see Golden State winning 3 in a row against Oklahoma City the way they're playing right now. And the fact that, you know, obviously the game's tonight and we're recording before tip-off here, the fact that Toronto and Cleveland are 2-2, so somebody just has to win 2 games, right? When you think of it in the context of the Raptors are 2 games away from the finals, it doesn't sound that distant, right? And Cleveland, as good as they've been, they have had their little slip-ups or funky times based on their chemistry or just the way things have gone. But I would assume they'll get things in order. And through LeBron's coaching and direction of Coach Lou, they'll figure it out. Just with Golden State, as great as they are and as great as they've been, they just look so overwhelmed, and it's hard to imagine I'd be saying these things about them this season. But they just look so overwhelmed by Oklahoma City, I can't imagine them winning 3 straight.
And, Tim, to wrap up, I did want to get your comments on the big story in Chicago now with Joaquin Noah, the article out by Joe Colley. He was a complete hack. But I hope that he had a chance to review it and read it, basically stating that, you know, Noah's done with the Bulls and he doesn't think Foreman could, you know, take them to the next level or bring them back. I'd just like to get your comments on that.
Right. Well, and even if Joe thinks that, I'm really shocked that news slipped out or became public for a couple reasons. One is, why would he really want to sabotage having the Bulls in a bidding war for his services, right? Even if he doesn't intend to come back, and I don't know if there will be a bidding war for him. We kind of talked through it through the season. Is he out of gas, just mileage or injuries, or, like we're seeing with Steven Adams, that's kind of in his prime how Noah played in my mind, right? He was that kind of an impact player without being a scorer, but his impact on the game through passing, rebounding, leadership, toughness, and just energy. And so I just was finding it quite odd that news would come out, because in the postseason press conference, you saw the quotes from Pax, and they were very favorable, I thought, toward Noah, and especially in a season when Noah really had no impact on the team, right? When he played, you know, their record wasn't anything special. You know, we talked about that throughout the season, and then he got injured and was gone for the season. So, you know, it was really his body of work that Pax talked about, and some of the things that were lacking on the Bulls team this year in terms of what I just mentioned, the leadership and toughness and you know, maybe some things in the locker room, holding guys accountable beyond what the coach was laying out for them. So I just thought it was really odd. And, you know, it wouldn't break my heart if Noah was gone, just because I think, you know, his time with the Bulls has kind of passed. In terms of what he's going to bring to the table, and if they're going to really make a shift and try to go younger, I can't imagine him being in the plans or being in the plans at what salary he's probably going to command, even with all the negatives, I guess we would say, working against him, negatives meaning high mileage, coming off injury, and just his production has been down, right, over the last few years. And I know the injuries have impacted that, but I don't know. What's your thought on it, Fred? I know we've had mixed emotions about him, and he's been such a passionate player and leader for the Bulls over the years. I don't really want to throw him under the bus at all, but if he's saying these negative things about the franchise and the organization, I just really think that should be more private. And for his own personal game, have the Bulls, you know, being one of the teams that's trying to sway him to come their way, even if he's intending to go elsewhere.
Well, you know, the way the article read, there's one player where he's primarily getting his source from. So who knows who that one player is? That guy might have an agenda against the coaching staff, might have an agenda against Scott Foreman, might have an agenda against Noah, because it sure doesn't help Joaquin to come out with this information and basically take the Bulls off the table as a potential landing place, right? I'm sure Joakim is not happy that this information is out like this. You know, that said, I don't buy a lot of it. Like, I don't think Joakim Noah, when he shot 38% in the games he played last year, in the 30 games he played, and just played in a horrific, was worried about Gar Foreman during those games. My biggest concern about Joakim is he's declined, his level of play has declined tremendously. He shot 48% from the free throw line last year. Do you think he was concerned about, while he was standing at the free throw line, thinking about Gar Foreman and John Paxson and missing Tibbs? And finally, according to a recent interview we had with Casey Johnson, it's clear that Joakim Noah was one of the guys who wanted Tibbs out. So, you know, what is it? The article did make it seem like they were, quote-unquote, Fred Hoiberg and him were repairing their relationship, but his relationship with Gar Foreman was bad. I don't think his relationship with Gar Foreman should matter when it comes to everyday basketball, playing the game, and performing at a high level. My biggest concerns about Noah are, I think he's declined because of the injuries and the toll over the previous 5 years, that I don't think he's worth the money he's going to get. But I know I'm in the minority here. I know most of the fans want him back, and I think he does provide leadership, which is huge. But if you listen to anything you've read, on the radio or anything we've read, you know, it's clear that him and Jimmy are at odds somewhat, and I think it might be better if we are going to build around Jimmy, if that's the plan, that he moves on.
Right. Well, right, that this news came out, I think, is really detrimental in a lot of ways, right? It, regardless of the source or how substantial it is, the fact that it's out there now, you can't really take it back. It's out there. And I know I saw something where Bill Duffy, you know, Joe's agent, came out and said, you know, basically denied it, and that Joe has nothing but great things to say about the Bulls and the franchise, and they're trying to do some damage control. And kind of the contrast to that, I don't know if you've seen, Jimmy's made some appearances on some of the, on NBA TV, and he's been on the Starters and been a very positive, face of the franchise, I thought, in some of those different interviews and appearances, and seemed very, very comfortable in front of the camera and representing the Bulls. So that's been kind of the other side of the coin, I guess, of what I've seen lately. So I don't know if they'd be presenting Jimmy, and I know some of it may be done just on Jimmy's own initiative rather than through the Bulls organization, I'm not sure, but he's been a very positive force out in the market, I think, representing the Bulls.
Yeah, agreed. Tim, I really appreciate you jumping on, talking playoffs, and talking about this very important issue. Look forward to having you on again shortly as we begin the finals and find out who's playing who in the East for the
right. Yeah, so, some interesting stories unfolding and ones that we certainly wouldn't have expected, you know, a week or 10 days ago.
Exactly. But as always, your presence is greatly appreciated on the Bullseye. Looking forward to having you on again soon, my man.
All right, Fred. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you later, Tim.